Easy, Squirrel Master. We are live for another edition of the Fraudcast. I think this is Fraudcast 53, live from the Fraud Quarters in San Francisco. Yeah. This is your ear rapist, Ben. We have blogger extraordinaire Vince in the house.
Heyo.
We have human giant Brendan.
Party and party and.
Yeah. And we have the Squirrel Master, Brett.
Don't step on our bits, man.
It's going to be very exciting. We have a song to unveil.
That's how an English person asks not to be kicked in the groin. Don't step on my bits.
Oi! That's my
Me mom gave me these bits, they did.
Vince had an interview with the writers of Bad Teacher.
Yeah, Gene Stupnitsky and Lee Eisenberg from The Office and Bad Teacher, year one.
And Ghostbusters, correct?
Ghostbusters 3 that Bill Murray has not read yet. So
that's the best one.
We'll talk to them about that.
Yeah, that's the best one.
Yeah.
So Vince didn't invite us to that. We weren't dressed nice enough, and Brendan refused to put his pants on.
I can't take you guys anywhere.
So. No, but his pants.
I try.
His pants, they're just not comfortable.
I lean
over
backwards.
You know, when you get to be almost 30 years old, you just reach a point where you're like, I'm not wearing pants anymore.
I've reached that point a long time ago. It's robes or nothing.
Yeah. I'm just mad I shaved my eyebrows
Maybe
for
kimonos.
It and didn't get to go.
Did you shave your eyebrows? They're looking kind of thin. Did you like
I did
get
that.
A, did
I did
get
that.
A waxing?
I did that for the interview like that the, I didn't get to go to.
Like the Japanese bagel heads?
I don't know what that means.
The bagel. Have you seen that? It's like this Japanese body mod that they do. They inject liquid into their forehead, and it makes it look like they have this bagel sticking out of their forehead.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Why is that desirable by anyone?
Have you met a body mod person? They're not sane.
Hmm. Yeah, those are the type of people that put stuff under their skin, like horns and stuff.
Like the growths on the spine and the horns.
That's a good look. I've always wanted to put BBs under my skin. Whenever I saw a BB, I was like, you know where that belongs? Right on my forehead, under my skin.
It'd be cool if like the body mods were functional. Like, I mean, if you could give me a prehensile tail, I would be all over that shit. But
I'd take wings even if they
were functional. Opposable motherfucking toes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
Bro.
Yeah. We got some good reader emails, so thank you. We're going to read some of those.
We got some excellent reader emails.
But
this is by far the best week in reader emails. So.
Yes.
Well, most importantly, I think my life is now complete because I don't know if I'm always saying this right. Wakas, who has created our soundboard.
It sounds like a sound effect. He's created our soundboard, and he sounds like a sound effect.
Yeah.
Wakas!
And he created a remix that had me cry laughing at work. Wakas, thank you very, very much.
Let's just get into it.
Just get into it. Go. Wait, let's real quick. It's called Squirrels in the Sky by DJ Squirrel Master Brett. All right. And the Squirrel Master Brett is in the house.
Hey, 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 hey. Hey, do you like that? Hey, you gotta adapt or die. Hey, do you like that? If you can't draw the tail good, it's just not gonna read squirrel.
Fake Brett sounds like Brett Favre.
Hey, do you like that?
He sounds like Philip Rivers.
I've been drawing stuff all day. Hey, do you like that? Hey, what do you think about if you put a picture of your penis and then you put a caption on it? I enjoy making love, having sex, making love, having sex, making love and drawing stuff all day. I enjoy making love more than I like having sex. I feel like it's deeper.
That's at least the 174th time I've listened to that, and it's still really funny.
So if this is your first time listening to the Fraudcast, I really have no idea how to explain that to you.
Start at number one, and then call us in 52 weeks.
It's very deep with inside jokes that didn't really make sense in the first place. Because there's this guy, Brett. Over here to my right, Brett.
Hello.
And sometimes he's not here, and so I do this voice that I call fake Brett that's really nothing like Brett at all except for the fact that he draws squirrels for a living.
And it turns out he sounds like Philip Rivers and or Brett Favre.
That's the only true part about it. We both draw squirrels for a living.
That's the one common thread there.
I draw them with bush tails sometimes, and then other times they're eating stuff and saving it in their cheeks for winter. You know, because them squirrels, they're... you know.
Well,
really good example for everybody for playing in the head.
Well, Koss was the only submission we got as far as like the Frotcast remix, but it was a doozy. The submission window is still open, though. If anyone else wants to make a remake, well, I definitely
and if someone wants
more.
To write an opening song, there's no guarantees that just because you send it, it'll be used. But you could get on the intro of the Frotcast and be listened to by dozens.
We did use
it's
Satan's
gotta be better
butt
than,
cheeks.
It's
got to
be better
time.
Than News Team Assemble, though, and that's a tall order.
I'm just saying, if there's something custom made just for us, that vaults it up pretty high, pretty quickly. We did get a lot of great reader emails. Nothing does compare to Squirrels in the Sky, but there was, let's see.
These emails are good for us. I don't know if you guys will be interested in them, but man, they are some ego boosters for us. So,
oh, man.
I felt good reading them. I hope you can share in this vicariously. I think we should start doing what Oprah does, where she basically, you know, whatever makes her feel good.
You get a fart. You get a fart.
She just sort of assumes that it's going to make her audience feel good. And I got this award. Yeah. And you got this award with me. Yay!
We all won the award.
Yeah.
Are we getting a studio audience?
Yeah. What if we got like, what if we actually had like a theme song? Like not Squirrels in the Sky, but actually like where they like, it was like an introduction. I think it'd be great.
That's
like,
what I'm saying.
You could do like the love, it'd be like, the Broadcast, they're talking
is a little old place where you can talk about doo-doo.
Yeah, I'm talking about.
There's Brandon, he laughs at poop.
Yeah, an original song. It can be a parody, but original song. Send it in, and you know, maybe we'll use it. But yes, there were some boner-inducing ego boosters that we received. One is from John. John, I hope you don't get in trouble for this. But John did say the title was "Free Shirts Are Helpful." He writes, "Walking around Philadelphia this past weekend, I was stopped by two guys drinking on their stoop that pointed at me and started yelling. I assumed I was about to get punched. When I was given a high five with a thumb folded in and handed a beer on account of my birthday dog shirt." You should know what birthday dog shirts are.
Yeah.
"I thanked them, but soon realized that they had given me a Bud Light Lime. So I gave it to a homeless guy and bought a glass of whiskey because I'm not saving up to pay for my half of some Sorostitute's third abortion and I can spare a couple dollars. In summation, birthday dog can get you a free beer, but it will be a really shitty beer." John. That's an ego booster right there.
There's a lot to like about that email.
Yeah.
Like, he got double trolled. He got pigeoned, and then they gave him a Bud Light Lime. It was probably the one that had been sitting in their fridge forever. Like, someone brought a six-pack over to a party, and then, like, no one wanted to drink it. So then, like, they just had it on their stoop with them, and they're like, oh, let's wait for some sucker to come by, and we'll get
Blimes,
a Bud Light Light.
Blimes get a lot of shit, but they will help you through a tough situation. Say you're 2 days' worth of hangover, just sitting waiting for a plane, and it's a work party, and you don't want to throw up on the plane. You get a warm Blime in you, and you will be good to go.
You're like little kid. You're at a little kid birthday party, and they're like, "Hey, you guys have any Sprite?" And you just give him a little. You just give him a Blime, and you tell him to shut his face.
Yeah, go take a nap, fucker.
Yeah, but yeah. See, I mean, being able to recognize the film drunk shirt is one thing. That's pretty cool. But the fact that they actually knew of Frotcast lore, we're talking a much smaller core fan base.
Right.
That's like going to the snow level.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have birthday dog shirts left? Can people still purchase birthday dog shirts?
I'm all out
That's
of everything
like going
except
to the
for
snow level.
Shoot.
We
need a shoehorn sound effect where it's like squeak, squeak.
Or just someone whose job it is to do sound effects and not talk.
Oh, you mean like we'd hire someone?
Yeah.
Just to sit here and do
sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. None of it. I can't be on the soundboard because I'm too busy flapping my big old
whip.
Oh,
you have such a hard job.
I kind of got fired up about the idea of having a live studio audience. Can you just round up some vagrants and get them to sit in here? Ben's cool with that, right, Ben?
I love vagrants in my place.
You should do that.
A couple of people have written us emails about asking to sit in, which I'm cool with. The problem is that
I don't want to meet anyone that likes your work. Yeah. Anyone.
Yeah, the other people aren't, and we do this in Ben's bedroom. I don't think he's too down with that. But
well, as long as they're stinky hobos.
Yeah. You know. So far, everybody that I've met because of Film Drunk, it's been a pretty good experience. I haven't had any weird, awkward situations
I mean, you've
yet.
Only been raped a couple times.
Yeah, but, you know.
You did meet Brendan.
Huh? What do you mean?
I mean, he's right here.
We met in college.
I'm lost.
I was
next.
Naked.
Next email. Next.
Well, Brendan, did you want to read it, your favorite email?
Yeah, this is my favorite email. Of course, I'm biased. This is from also John. I don't know if it's the same John.
It may be. I don't know.
I think those are maybe each one was a They Might Be Giants singer. I think.
Oh right. That was an obscure reference.
They're both named John.
Yeah.
John said John.
So this one says, yesterday afternoon, I was waiting out a delayed flight from Boston Logan. After a while, I ran out of other things to do, so I retired to the bathroom for a recreational shit. After a few minutes, someone came shuffling in, huffing and puffing into the next stall. Almost immediately, he starts taking one of the loudest shits I've ever heard in my life, with a variety of sound effects so broad that, until the smell hit me, I assumed it was some kind of prank with a fart noise iPhone app. So far, pretty par for the course in a terminal whose only two restaurants are a Fox News restaurant and a seafood place, presumably because everyone loves airplanes so much. But out of nowhere, the guy starts laughing hysterically and continues cracking up and running the gamut of ass trumpetry for a full 3 minutes before throwing the door open and marching out proudly and silently. So my question is, was Brendan in Boston yesterday, John? No, I was not, but I'm honored that you would consider me.
Well, a telltale sign would be Brendan always puts 13 cowboy hats exactly onto the toilet seat, so you could count it out. You know, if you count up to 13, then that's Brendan. He's one of the few that puts more than one.
Well, you have to, otherwise you'll get ass herpes and your family will die.
Oh, simultaneously, yeah.
Again, for the new listeners, those ass gasket things,
why
the tissue
you,
papers.
Why are you explaining? Why are you explaining to new listeners?
Dude, we're gonna have so many new listeners this week.
Really?
I know. Oh, so many. You don't know. I've been pumping this up, bro. I've been doing so much outreach.
Well, if there's one thing that makes jokes funnier is when you have to explain them.
I've been passing out flyers.
Could you just run through
the
last
year? I'm just trying to make it accessible for the idiot layman, okay?
All right. We got one more email.
Fuck you, fucking quiz.
That it seems a little far-fetched. He claims it's true, but even if it's fake.
If it's fake, it was a great story. Let's put it that way.
Agreed. So even if it's fake, it is still a wonderful story and, again, a boner-inducing ego booster that helps me sleep at night. William.
Wait. Never mind.
Your metaphor is
weird.
What? I can't sleep with a boner?
Props me up on my side so I can sleep because of the erect penis.
Yeah.
Keeps the blood flowing through my ass cheeks.
Yeah, you got it.
I don't know what this is.
You know me so well.
I was crying tears and then my boner just dried him.
My ego was sucked up into my abdominal cavity.
You guys just know me so well. You hit right to the core of me. Fratketeers, you hit right to the core. So William writes in that the Fratcast cost me $50. It's kind of a long one, but it is worth it. Dear Fratcast, I have been listening to the podcast and reading Film Drunk for a while now, and I highly enjoy your views. I guess we can skip that. I returned to the small town in northeastern Ohio where I grew up from Cincinnati so I could spend Father's Day with my dad, whose health hasn't been too great lately. The Saturday before Father's Day, we were going to meet up at one of the local bar for drinks. But he had to bow out. I guess I should have edited this. But seeing how the only things to do in that town are drink or get laid, I decided to go anyways and do a fair amount of the former and hope for the latter. Driving to the bar, I noticed there were a lot of people out on the street as it was a fairly warm evening, and I thought back to the Fratcast where you discussed the IRL trolling technique of honking at someone and then waving the opposite direction.
The old wrong way wave.
Yeah.
Yep. The old tried and true wrong way wave. Deciding this was the perfect opportunity to put this to use, I gave a quick beep of my horn to an elderly couple walking on the street and proceeded to wave at the local library. I drove maybe 25 more feet when I noticed the blue and red flashing lights in my rear view and pulled to the side of the road. The officer who pulled me over was a good-looking young woman who didn't look old enough to be out of high school, let alone be a police officer. After giving her my license and asking if I knew why she pulled me over, she proceeded to explain that the city had passed an ordinance making it illegal to sound your horn in the city proper, and then asked why I had waved at the library. I explained to her that I had heard it on the Film Drunk broadcast and decided to see if it was as funny as you claimed. She gave me a look and walked back to her car. After running my information, she came back to my window and handed me a ticket for the violation. After telling me how much the fine was and where I could pay it, She gave me a little smirk and proceeded to wish me good night and good chins. Mind completely blown, I proceeded to bar and drank copious amounts of booze and struck out with every woman there. The next day, while grilling steaks with my dad for dinner and fighting a vicious hangover, I told my dad what had happened. After laughing at me, he called the chief of police, who he's very good friends with, and invited him over for to dinner as well. After we were done with dinner, he had me explain what happened to the chief, who, after laughing his ass off, called the officer and had her stop by as well. Long story short, me and her hit it off, and we were planning on meeting up with the chief's blessing this weekend when she is in my home city of Cincinnati for some kind of training. So all you fuckers cost me $50. It's also because of you that I'll be farting in the monkey fufu, bee pumper style of a 23-year-old police officer, and I thank you for that. Fraud on, William.
Yeah, awesome. I don't. I still have a hard time. Well, I'm trying to get proof out of him. He sent me a receipt for this ticket. I don't know. I'm just inclined not to believe it because it's just it all wraps up in just a perfect. Perfect little package.
Perfect little nugget of awesomeness.
Yeah, if it is true, that's probably the best story ever. And if it's not, well done.
Yes, exactly. It's a win-win. Yeah.
I do like how he describes the town that he's in as like, oh, it's so boring. All there is to do is drink and get laid. It's like, what else are you looking for? Yeah. You know, the drinking getting laid is cool. I wish there was more sightseeing.
The library has hardly any books. I was trying to find some stuff on audiobook.
You know what? Honestly,
I guess I'm going to go on
iTunes. I'm a big foodie. Not that many gourmet food spots. I'm just saying. I mean,
it's like everything has figs.
I'm so over the fig routine. Like, come on, something else.
Like truffle oil, that is so 2010.
Tragically, the least believable part of that is that a girl listens to the Frogcast.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, no, it's not so much that a girl listens to the Frogcast. It's that
a hot girl
police officer. That's like a hot girl police officer that listens
Frogcast
to the Frogcast. That's a lot of demographics.
And she gets all the way to the end every time.
That's true.
Yeah.
She would have had to sit through a full episode.
Also, the part about you can't honk your horn in the city proper. I don't know.
No, that's true.
Really?
Again.
Especially in small towns. Yeah. I mean, like, because it's actually in California, you can't honk your horn unless, like, it's to avoid an accident, technically, but obviously no one's gonna like bust your balls for it in a big city. But if you're in like a small town,
I like Mitch Hedberg's old bit about limiting the amount of horn honks that you had like per month.
Well, even in Vince,
if someone's about to run into you and all of a sudden you hit the horn, it's just like, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have seen Ricky on the street. one of my favorite
Vince, God rest his soul. Yeah,
I don't remember if these were up when you were living in New York, but in certain areas of New York, there's big signs in the intersection that say no honking, $300 fine.
Well, there's a cultural thing in the East Coast. Like on the West Coast, when you honk, it means like you fucked up. You have done something seriously wrong. I'm scolding you right now. Whereas on the East Coast, they use their horns constantly. It just means like, oh, hey, I'm going to be changing lanes within 5 feet of you. So
I have a horn.
Yeah,
guys.
Hello.
That's kind of how.
Nice to meet you. I am coming in now.
That's how New Yorkers act without a horn.
I'm scared existence might not mean anything.
All right. So
this horn represents my existential crisis.
Can anybody hear this horn?
My existential crisis is loud and goes honk.
So quickly, before we get to this interview, I just wanted to go through the box office fantasy summer box office numbers.
Am I winning yet?
You have not had any of your movies up yet.
Woo!
Yeah.
Turns out that while Green Lantern was a gigantic bomb, it actually didn't do terrible for a first week opening.
It was a good pick because since we're doing opening weekend, it had a $52 million opening weekend, which is kind of like steroid induced because like a lot of that was 3D. So it was actually did way worse than X-Men, but because of 3D, it didn't do that much worse.
What do you mean 3D?
The 45% of them were premium priced 3D, so that gross, in terms of attendance, it was not that much better.
Ooh, which makes Transformers an even better looking pick now.
Yeah,
that I think about
is
it.
Is it 3D? So,
oh yeah.
So basically,
it's Transformers 3D.
So one of Brendan's picks was Mr. Popper's Penguins, which was kind of a dog that made $18 million on the weekend. But his bomb pick, where we're doing production budget minus the gross, Green Lantern was a $160 million production budget.
Shocker. So, none of us thought that was going to bomb except for Vince. You really...
Well, the thing is, it's a good bomb pick and a good regular pick.
Yeah, turns out it's a...
Like, I have the most, you know, I have two movies that have come out already, and both of them are in the 50s. You have Super 8, which is 37.
I didn't realize
Brendan has Mr. Poppers, which is only 18, but his bomb pick was pretty huge, where it's negative 107.
That's right.
Turns out Space Jizz is very versatile.
Yeah, yeah.
It's both. It's not.
It does not provide a high return on investment.
No, but
it's a volatile market.
Yeah,
Space Jizz does do well in fantasy box office standings.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a interesting little wrinkle. Some of them sometimes a bomb pick is good. You pick the same movie as your bomb pick and
interesting.
You know,
yeah.
If you think the big Space Jizz lobby is in your side, you're more naive than I thought.
The powerful Space Jizz lobby. Yeah. Wait, which one's
looking out for you?
Do they cover both green and yellow Space Jizz, or are those two separate lobbies?
You have to keep them in different silos.
Oh, they're like red and it's like red and blue states, man. They're just two. Yeah.
There's green and yellow Space Jizz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't want like a lime colored Space Jizz. Yeah.
You can't fight Jizzy Hall.
No. No. Jesus.
No.
Where's that cricket button when I need it? All right, so let's get to this interview, and we'll be back after I talk to Gene Stupnitsky and Lee Eisenberg, writers of Bad Teacher, which is coming out today. When you be by the time you listen to this, and for The Office.
Hey, buddy.
I can't wait to talk to those
thanks
guys.
For inviting
I tried
us.
To invite you. It didn't work out
because
of scheduling.
Hey Ben.
I'm really excited to talk to those two guys.
Do you think we're going to ask some great questions? Because I've got like
a list of
a notepad
very
full of
thought-provoking questions.
Famous person, I'm so hoping you could come on my podcast. Oh, what time can we do it? Oh, well, Brett's going to have to do it after 8:30 p.m. On either Thursday or Wednesday. So if you can't fit into those 2 hours, we're just going to have to reschedule. Sorry,
I'm a pretty big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Rolling Squirrel.
Have you never heard of DJ Squirrel Master Brett? All right, let's get
Internet
to the
sensation.
And here's the interview. Enjoy.
Cool. So is this just Gene?
Lee and Gene. Hey, Vince, Gene.
Oh, okay. Cool. Now I can tell the difference.
Yeah, it's very subtle.
So yeah, I was I always have this idea about, you know, screenwriting duos that you guys have, like, you sleep in matching bunk beds like Zoolander, and you live in like a cabin or something. How does that, like, how did you guys meet? When did you guys start writing together, and how'd you make that decision?
We met on the set of Bedazzled, the Elizabeth Earle and Brendan Fraser devil movie, and Gene was an intern for Harold Ramis, and I was a PA, and then we started writing a little bit, and then we kind of writing off and on, and we became friends and roommates, and then we ended up, the first thing we ended up writing together was this pilot about two loser magicians that was loosely based on two loser writers named Lee and Gene, and turned into Lonnie and Gordo. That was our thinly veiled cover up for ourselves.
And what happened with that?
Well, Fox bought it, and then they did not shoot it, and then Greg Daniels read it. That's how we got hired on The Office. And yeah, I mean, it kind of got us a lot of work, even though nobody, it never actually got shot.
So, Lee, where did you grow up?
I grew up outside of Boston in a town called Needham.
And what was your background before you sort of got into, like, writing The Office and all that stuff?
I moved out to L.A. in 99 and was just kind of bummed around, was a PA for a while, then became a writer's assistant on a bunch of shows. And I got hired as a drama writer on JAG. And then got fired from being a drama writer. And, and then, you know, Gene and I started writing together more probably around, like, 2004. And then ever since then, that's when we wrote the pilot and got hired in The Office, you know, like a year later.
Was there any specific incident that caused you to get fired from JAG, or was it just sort of a mass bloodletting?
I think it was gross incompetence. I think it was, I had no idea. It was, you know, it's a military law show. And I knew nothing about either. And so I just did tons and tons of research and basically filled my outline with as many acronyms as possible to show that I knew what I was doing.
I always thought that's how they did those shows.
And then the executive producer said that he could not read my outline. Like, he thought it was too confusing and he didn't know what any of the acronyms meant. And I got fired like a couple days later.
So it's more about knowing your audience than knowing the material. Then is that? Did you learn that lesson?
Well, I think I learned that I'm not one of those. I think my field of expertise is narrow, and I have not gone back into. I don't think we'll ever go back into like military law as a setting for one of our shows. It could be a movie. Yeah, we are developing 3 military law movies, but.
What was your crappiest job as a PA?
My crappiest job as a PA, let's see. Well, as an assistant, I had to. My boss asked me if his email address could just. I won't say the guy's name, but he wanted his email address to be at his name, and I said that I didn't think that would work, and he made me go down to IT and see if his email address could just be at his name, and then he wanted his email address to be. Whatever the subject of an email was at his name. And whenever I said, oh, I don't think that will work, he said, I know you don't think it will work. Why don't you talk to someone who will let me know if that could work? At one point, he wanted it just to be a space, literally, so that somebody would click the space bar at hisname.com. So that was an afternoon in my life that I'll never get back.
That's the same guy that with the microwave?
Oh, yeah. He also said to me... He called me once and said, Lee, what happens if you microwave something in a metal takeout container? And I said, well, I think that the microwave will, you know, catch on fire. I don't think you're supposed to do that. He said, you didn't listen to me. The microwave did not catch on fire. I did it. I want to know what happens if I eat it. I said, I don't know. He goes, I know you don't know. Go online and find out and call me back. So I went online and for 15 minutes... asked the internet the world's stupidest question, and all the websites in the world, there actually is not an answer to this because it's so stupid. And I called him back and said, I said I couldn't find the answer. And he goes, well, I probably won't die. And I said, no, you probably won't die. And he said, well, if I died, it wouldn't be the end of the world. And I said, no, it wouldn't be the end of the world. And then he ate his food. So
what was the food?
It was takeout Italian.
Ah. All right. So, and then Gene, what were you doing before you guys met up?
I was actually a nanny for Harold Ramis and or a Manny, and then I had a series of assistant PA jobs in LA, which I was constantly getting fired from. And let's see, I was a writer's assistant at Crank Yankers for 3 weeks and got fired. And I worked on Curb Your Enthusiasm. I got fired. I worked a temp agency. I got fired.
When you get fired from these places like Crank Yankers and Curb Your Enthusiasm, I mean, what is the sit down process where they fire you like?
Well, you know, I usually see it coming. So It's never, like, I usually am warned. And I'm just, you know, I cannot get it together to care about someone else's schedule. I just couldn't do it. And, they fired me for incompetence as well, but on an assistant level. And I just didn't know Excel. I didn't know, you know, I have ADD, and I was never really, I can't take it, follow instructions very well. So I just was never, it was never going to work. But they bring me in, usually there's like 3 people, and there's a box of Kleenex in front of me. And you know, they let me down easily, and I'm expecting it. So you know, I'm not the guy who's going to put up a fight. I just kind of take it.
Yeah.
I think they like me. They feel bad doing it, but you know.
Side note: I was doing a little research for you to see if someone had made a movie called Manny before, and I didn't find anything. But the first entry on IMDb is actually Emmanuel Lewis Webster. That's his nickname apparently. So. Yeah, you can save that for trivia later. Did you guys both go to school like to be writers, or is it just something that you decided on later, or how'd that come about?
I was an English major, but I wanted to originally be a film critic first, and then I was writing movie reviews for the Daily Island, but I was plagiarizing a lot of stuff. And so I would just basically cut and paste other people's reviews, and half the time, because I was too lazy to actually do it.
Yeah.
And then I moved out to LA, and I decided I wanted to be a director. And someone pointed out that, you know, no one's going to give you $50 million to direct a movie, but if you can write, that would help. So I'm like, all right, I'll write a screenplay. And I started working on a screenplay. And I was like, damn, this is a lot of work. I was like, I'm going to write a sitcom instead. That's 100 pages, 30 pages. It's much more manageable. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that. And I was like, this is fucking taking forever. A lot of work. I'm like, I'm going to write sketch comedy. That's like 5 pages. I can definitely do that. So I started making a sketch packet. And then I was like, fuck, this is not working out. So then I just started writing jokes. And I started like one-liners and slanging them to comedians. And then slowly working my way back up to jokes, to sketches, to TV, to movies, basically.
Where did you find these comedians that you're selling them one-liners, and were they receptive to?
I found them. So this guy, they call him the Pitbull of comedy. This guy, Bobby Slayton.
Oh, yeah, I know Bobby Slayton. Yeah,
and he was working on a show called Mind of the Married Man, and Lee was the writer's assistant there. So I went in and met him. And, you know, his, as you know, his brand of comedy is pretty harsh.
Yeah.
So he's trying to write in his voice.
He stutters a lot, too.
Yeah. And then this other woman how did we get in touch with her? I can't remember. She had a guest starring thing on Curb. Her name is Kim Whitley. So he wrote some jokes for her. She was the prostitute that Larry picks up in the carpool lane.
Oh, yeah.
And wrote jokes for her and some other people, but nothing. And never really. I couldn't pay my rent doing that.
How much did you charge per one-liner?
It was $75.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair. Then,
there were $50 jokes. That's the irony.
Yeah. I ripped them off.
Well, if you price it too low, it will never be. They'll never be respected as premium one-liners.
Exactly. Well, I was trying to actually price it low and create a feeding frenzy,
uh-huh.
like real estate, but it never worked.
This was before Groupon had taken off. This was years ago.
Yeah, well, if you could put it on eBay for 1 cent at first, then, you know, you get a few bids generally.
Right. Yeah, so basically that's, and then Lee and I were friends, and then we became roommates like a couple years later and sold some stuff to Curb Your Enthusiasm, some of my story ideas, and then started writing together after that.
But didn't they ask you for like 10 story ideas or something like that, or 10...
Yeah, well, we faxed, this is how long ago it was, we actually faxed in 10 ideas, and their email was around, I don't know why we faxed it, actually, but we got a call, I was temping at Nickelodeon, and I got a call, you know, please hold for Larry David. He was like, hey, just want you to know, I read your ideas, and I'm already doing two of them separate from you, and I don't want you to sue me. Like, I'm not going to sue you. It was, but they're pretty good, so if you do more, I'll read them. So that weekend, Lee and I like came up with 35 more ideas, and he ended up buying 3 of them for season 5.
And how did you get them to him in the first place? Was this just like unsolicited? Did something that you...
Well, I worked on Curb.
Okay, yeah.
The PA and an assistant, so... I knew his assistant.
And then from there, what was getting on The Office? What was that process?
We wrote that this thing, Lonnie and Gordo,
yeah.
that he was talking about, and that got us on The Office, and then Harold Ramis read it, and he had sold this Year One, the idea for Year One with Owen Wilson to Sony, and he started working on it and brought us onto it. To work on it with him.
And so then how long were you guys writing on The Office?
5 seasons we worked on it, yeah. From season 2, which was episode 7, to season 6, which was not this year, but the year before it.
So there was already, I mean, like the characters were all set and...
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And yeah, the first season was 6 episodes.
Right, and then, I mean, what was the writing process for that? Like, who's in charge? I mean, you guys have, like, that works, like, the actors, a lot of the actors are, like, writer-performers, kind of, or how did that work?
So, on that staff when we started, it was BJ Novak, who played Ryan, the intern, Mindy Kaling, who played Kelly Kapoor, and Paul Lieberstein, who played Toby. And so the three of them were writer-actors, but the rest of us weren't, you know, we would pop up occasionally. But we weren't really doing that, only those three. And then, you know, Carell would write an episode here and there, but that's basically it.
So now do you just get to, like, hang out in your underwear and, like, write movies?
We try to put on clothes as often as possible.
I think that's
one of the rules that we have.
Yeah, well, one time Lee came over to write, and I was in my robe, and he was like, come on, man, get it together. So after that, I always get dressed then. But yeah, you do. I mean, writers are so lazy, so we're no different.
I mean, what was it like on The Office? I mean, were you working the same kind of schedule that they're shooting on, or was it like...
Well, it was based around Carell's movie schedule, so, you know, we'd start in... When we start, you know, it changed, but we'd work most of the year.
Probably work like... You work like 10 and a half months of the year, and then the days were... You get into the office around 10, and then you leave whenever the work is done. I mean, the difference between movies and TV is... In TV, every week there, you have to have a new episode. And in movies, unless you're, you know, unless there's actually a start date and you're, you know, racing to a start date, you know, the deadlines are a little looser. And if you need an extra couple days, you take an extra couple days. Whereas in TV, if you take a couple extra days, you just don't do that.
Yeah.
You have to get it done. So you stay, you pull all-nighters and you stay till 3 a.m. and all that kind of stuff.
What's the process like when there's a bunch of, I mean, when you're trying to create storylines on a show with like a set number of characters, like what's the, what is your requirement in terms of trying to get everyone like a storyline? Cause I don't know. I feel like on a lot of sitcoms, there's at least like one or two too many characters. And I always wonder how that works. Where do you have to like include people specifically, or are they hassling you for that? How does that work?
I mean, there's so many. I mean, the actors on The Office were so good, and we liked the characters so much that, I mean, the real problem is that you only have 20 minutes or 21 minutes to fit everything in. So the average episode, you know, everyone would definitely have a line or a couple lines. And then, you know, as you start cutting down, the rough cuts of the episodes could be anywhere from 35 to 41 minutes. So you're basically cutting, you know, 40%, 50% of what you shot and what you had written. And a lot of times things that are a little extraneous or like a little scene that doesn't really advance the A story will get cut out, and those, you know, where you get a lot of deleted scenes. But, you know, I think the writers always, I mean, you're always servicing the leads of the show. But again, the bench was so deep that if you hadn't told a story about someone for a long time, you might just say, hey, let's try to focus on that character, or let's try to come up with an arc or whatever. And, you know, it happens that I think the writers get excited about a particular character, a particular story, and that will go on for 5 episodes, and then some other little nugget will, you know, take it in a different direction, and it kind of goes like that.
Yeah. Well, who's like the easiest to write for you guys?
Probably Michael. I mean, he was the most... Michael and Dwight were the most fun to write for. They were,
yeah,
the most comic character. I mean, Creed was easy because you could just really write anything.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to make sense. But I mean, Michael and Dwight were the most fun to write for. Yeah.
Earnest stupidity is something that we like a lot.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Michael is.
What's the, like, if you, you know, how many writers do you have? I mean, what's the, who's the person who decides, like, what stories that you guys are going to make?
Well, for the beginning of the first, I think, 4 seasons, it was Greg Daniels. It was showrunning, and then Paul Lieberstein took over. And, you know, Greg still had oversight, but Paul was a showrunner. So those two guys, basically, it was up to them.
Does Ricky Gervais just get to sit back and, like, collect a check for everything that the American Office does now?
Yeah, I don't think he's even seen... I feel like he's seen one episode of the show, maybe.
Have you guys ever met him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I met him a couple times.
Stephen Merchant directed... he's come by.
He was very, I mean, he directed a couple episodes. He was very, very active when he was there in the writer's room and pitching jokes and stories and talking about, you know, arcs and everything like that.
Yeah. So what was it like getting a Bad Teacher made? Like, where did start?
We wrote it on spec, and we kind of, you know, we felt like we've just been watching a lot of movies lately where female characters have just been so underwritten and were just kind of props for whatever the guys needed them to do. And we felt like there's all these funny girls and nobody's writing anything for them. So we kind of, A, from a creative standpoint, it seemed fun and different. And from a, you know, business standpoint, it seemed like there was an opportunity there. And we wrote it, and Sony was the only studio that bought it, or that, you know, that made an offer. And we had, you know, we'd done year one with them, and we were talking to them at that point, I think, about Ghostbusters, and it, you know, we just really liked them. And it was a great process. I mean, we did a rewrite, and then Jake Kasdan came on board, and then did a little bit of work with Jake. But the kind of the core of the idea and the the script from the spec to the what actually was shot was pretty close. I mean, considering how these things go. Yeah, and then it started going out to actresses, and there was interest, and, you know, it turns out there aren't all that many actresses that can get a movie greenlit, and found out that Cameron...
There's two, basically.
Found out that Cameron...
she kind of adopted the script or something, didn't she? I mean, how did that... Did she basically, like, adopted the script after she read it? How did that work?
Well, she... I mean, we didn't even know that she was getting it. It was
weird because it was... Originally, the character was, like, 24 years old.
Yeah.
And what we realized is no 24-year-old actress can get a movie greenlit in Hollywood.
And then as we started talking about Cameron, it started feeling right. And she has that... She's so winning and appealing to both men and women, and then she's also really funny. And she also can get really crass. And, yeah, we just... It just kind of fit. It clicked. And she was awesome, and she was super enthusiastic and, you know, was really game to kind of go with the material. And, you know, the material could be quite crude at times. So
what was it like having Justin Timberlake there? I mean, are people just like knocking you out of the way to tell him how funny he is every 5 seconds? And like
on set, it's, you know, there's so much downtime, so you kind of get used to it. At first you're like, whoa, that's Justin Timberlake, and then you spend enough time with him, you're like, okay, he's just there.
He's just JT.
And then but when people do knock us out of the way, it's like any kind of, you know, at the premiere, if we're talking to him, people definitely knock us out of the way to talk to him. It's pretty crazy.
But he came on the set and he would hang out when he wasn't in the scenes just to kind of watch. And he's just a funny, low-key guy. And then we also got to write a song with him for the movie. So he performs a song in the movie, and we like sat in his trailer with him with a guitar and wrote a song, which is kind of awesome.
Oh, I enjoyed that song.
Oh, good. Yeah. I think there's an extended version of it that's either continues to be brutal.
Well, when you're talking about getting pushed out of the way, like at the premiere, I always wonder what that's like, because for writers, it's like even the most established ones that are super, super successful, I mean, people don't really like recognize them on the street. Like, how does that... If you want to get special treatment, you just kind of have to go around like shouting, "Do you know who I am?" Or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain writers who hire publicists when their movie is coming out, which I think is really weird.
What does like Alan Loeb do press?
I have no idea.
He may do it, but you know, like Sorkin and all these guys. But again, Sorkin's always winning awards, so you just see him on TV all the time. And but yeah, it's like, We are in the background. That's, you know, we're writers. We're not performers. We're not actors. So
we try to post our picture online as often as possible so that people have a vague sense of who we are.
Yeah, like I try to find pictures of Seltzer and Friedberg. I think I feel like they live in a cave somewhere, or they try to have as few pictures of them as possible. I don't know if that's like part of their strategy.
But that's probably the way to go. We avoid pictures as well, and then they found they wrote an article about us on Deadline Hollywood, and they asked for a picture, and we said no.
We said we refer to the article without pictures.
And then they took a picture from this Variety thing about us, where it was like a top 10 comics thing, and you know, we were like dressed up for the picture because it was in the, you know, it was in the spirit of the article, and they pulled it.
It was a super douchey picture, but the context of the article, when you saw it with the other super douchey pictures, was funny.
It's supposed to be douchey.
And then with no context, it just looks like we're douchebags.
Yeah. And everyone was like, what the fuck is this? Who are these douchebags? And you're like, oh, yeah. So
ironic that it was Deadline, considering, like, Nikki Fink has one, like, tiny thumbnail-sized picture of herself in existence anywhere, and I think she had, like, one other one that became a huge deal because no one had ever seen what she looks like or anything.
She's doing it right. I'll take a page from her book.
Yeah, yeah. Could you say told you a lot? Sorry.
I think I'm going to hire a publicist for our next movie, and Gene won't, and then get tons and tons of press.
Yeah, and then you can leave him for... Will you leave him for Bob Ortsy or
yeah, I've become the third member. Maybe I can get a job on Hawaii 5-0.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, go back to my roots.
What's like the funniest, or what's like the most painful review you've ever had to read? I saw, my favorite thing was seeing Victoria Jackson like just talk about year one. And I think she had a particular problem, like with the intestine scene, where it like offended her at a religious level or something.
I think it made her cry or something.
Yeah,
which made me happy. But you know, every bad one is brutal. It's
there was one that started for year one. I can't remember the entire thing, but it says something like neither wit nor charm nor, you know, something else. And I was like, okay.
There's one. There was another one.
It's like a mailman. Like a mailman's motto.
What was the one? Maybe not Jack Black's best movie, but definitely his worst.
Oh, yeah.
Which made me laugh. Yeah, so I don't know. It just comes with the territory. You know, there's nothing you can do.
It's pretty fucking awesome to get movies made, and then you can forget it momentarily as you're reading someone that you worked on a script for 2.5 years or 3 years and went through, like, you know, carefully went through every line, hoping that it's funny and clever, and then have somebody say, like, the script is ponderous and disjointed and, you know, isn't funny and the characters are one note. And you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, well, how about the latest one I read in LA Weekly, where it was like they're very angry. She was very angry that you know, be careful what you wish for. Hollywood must hate women, and you know, a strong woman means a lazy, lying, scheming, slutty, and obstinately materialistic one.
Right. Yeah. No, we hate women so much. We spent 2.5 years writing one to show everyone how much we hate it.
I mean, you can't win, because it's like, you know, there's gonna be a critic for everything. It's like, you look at the comments on all these snarky blogs, and it's like, oh, they, you know, some WME hired promoted five assistants to agents, and they were all women. And then somebody on the comment section said, oh, I bet this article, you know, wouldn't have been written if it was all men, or something, you know, something like that. It's, yeah, like, well, if it was all men, then somebody would have said the opposite. It's like, you're never going to satisfy everyone. So you try to make something that makes you laugh and makes your friends laugh. And, you know, you hope that there's an audience for it. But you'll go crazy. If you try to please everyone, you know, you'll go nuts. And, you know, the other thing with Bad Teacher, it's like, some of the things are saying the movie wasn't harsh enough. And, you know, we tested the movie. We tested the movie with audiences, and there were certain jokes that we considered. And, you know, you go through a process, and you're watching with your friends, and you know,
audiences,
you try to do the best version of it that you can.
Audiences, you know, were like, this is too harsh. This is too much. It was turning them off. So you pull back. You know.
But you still try to maintain the integrity of the movie that you started with.
They test the hell out of these things. So they have it down to a science. And they're like, okay, this is really, bothering, you know, this part of the movie, or, you know, these lines are really, people aren't into it, find it offensive. So
what was the stuff that you guys pulled back on this one?
There's just a couple, you know, I think that I don't even know exactly what the jokes were, but I mean, there's just a couple of things where it just felt like,
oh, she said the word cunt, which I think turned off a lot of men, and a lot of men did not like her swearing.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a thing about Mexicans, which we pulled out. By the way, it'll be on the unrated DVD sale this fall.
What would it be called? Batter Teacher? Or like Batter Teacher?
Batter Teacher. So I think a lot, some men had a problem with her language.
I think also, I mean, to me, the character is funniest. Like, we always talked about her as somebody who doesn't go out of her way to be an asshole. It's just like, if you get in her way, she will, you know, she'll cut you down. And so sometimes when it felt like she was just swearing for the sake of swearing, that seemed not to work as well as when she's like, you know, she can't be bothered, basically.
Like, being mean would indicate giving too much of a fuck.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We always, although, say, yeah,
as you know, as a comic premise, adults being mean to kids always makes us laugh.
Yeah.
I'll never get sick of that.
Yeah, I my favorite line in the movie is when she was talking to the kid with the sweatshirt, and he's like saying how the sweatshirt was the last thing he has from his dad, who left him before he left. And she says, well, why do you think he didn't pack it?
Yeah.
That was good. What's the thing you guys are working on now for Jake Kasdan?
We haven't really advertised it too much. It's basically a relationship comedy, and it's a little bit, it's just kind of the messiness of, like, ending up with the wrong person and kind of dealing with the fallout of it. And it was an idea that we've been kicking around for a little bit, and then we wanted to find something else to do with Jake, and it just kind of everything kind of lined up, and we're kind of slogging our way through it now.
How much is like how well Bad Teacher does going to affect like what you guys get to do?
Probably, I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, I think that it will definitely help. Yeah, the movie does well. It will definitely help get the next one made.
You guys,
that stuff affects directors more than writers. You know, you can get into director jail if you have two or three bombs in a row. It's hard to get out of.
Why is that? Is that just because writers don't have control of it at a certain point?
Yeah, writers don't have control. I mean, the director, obviously, is the author of the film, and they're responsible for everything. So the responsibility...
They're more front and center.
Yeah, it lies with them, so...
You know, it's, I mean, in TV, the directors come and go, and the writers are there every week, and so... You know, in Success, nobody really talks about the showrunners or the executive producers and the creators of the shows get 95% of the credit, and maybe the pilot director gets a little bit. But in general, the author of the thing is the writer, and then movies it's just different.
I mean, and you take a script, and every director is going to have a different take on it, a different tone. It's going to be so many different types of movies in the same script. So it all falls on them.
Is it painful at a certain point to just like see something completely different than the way you imagine it, or are you just not? Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it is painful. Sometimes the opposite happens where it's better than what you wrote, and you're like, oh, that's great. But when it deviates, yeah, it hurts. Like, this is not at all how I imagined it. And there's nothing you can do.
But Jake was very, very inclusive, and we were on the phone with him every night, and we were involved in casting, and we were involved in looking at sets and wardrobe, and I mean at the end it fell on him, but he kind of came at it from like a TV directing style, which is the directors are listening to us for joke pitches on sets, and it was a lot more collaborative, I think, than other directors can be. Yeah.
Was there anybody in the cast that you guys like demanded had to be in it that was that you had to sort of make a demand on?
Even if we had ever made a demand,
aside from
they would laugh at us if we ever tried making a demand, probably. But there wasn't any. I mean, we didn't really write it for. With anyone in mind.
No, we gave casting decisions, and every one of those roles we debated and discussed, and there's no person that we pushed through or anything like that, and there's no person that Jake really pushed through.
Was it more on Sony's end?
I mean, everything was a discussion. I mean, I don't remember ever kind of getting into a thing with anyone involved where it was like, what? No, like that's ridiculous. Like, we don't want Lucy Punch, and. Everyone's saying it has to be Lucy. Like, there was never that. Everything was... Sony was really cool. I mean, they had opinions, and we welcome their opinions because they're smart people.
And it's their money.
And it's their money. but we never felt like the studio or, compromised the vision of the movie.
Yeah. And how much testing did it go through? Is that... How long does that take, and where do you do it? Is it just one place?
You kind of go all around. You go to Burbank, and you go to
Orange County,
and it's a helpful part of the editing process because you just start getting, it's in front of an audience, and the audience is not your friends and family. These are just average moviegoers who are excited to see a movie, and you hear what jokes work and what jokes don't work. And
are they average moviegoers, or is it just like people standing outside in the middle of the day?
Probably it's a little bit of both, but it's college kids, and they really try to get like a diverse crowd, and
but also it'll make you go crazy because you're convinced something is funny and it just doesn't play, and something you never wasn't even meant to be a joke or you didn't think was that great of a joke, it's a huge laugh, and it makes you question what you think you know about comedy. I guess, all right,
yeah.
Are you sitting like behind a one-way mirror, like smoking a cigarette?
We're sitting in the audience smoking a cigarette.
Okay. Like Cape Fear. Okay.
But it's very hard to argue when like an entire theater doesn't laugh at a joke. It's hard to say like, no, this has to be in it.
No, I know this is funny.
Right.
300 people didn't laugh at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I feel like some of my stand-up jokes, the best ones, are the ones that get complete groans instead of actual laughs. But
yeah. I mean, I'll take a groan sometimes. It's, you know, a groan is part of the movie going experience. It's when the audience has no reaction whatsoever, as if the entire audio just got muted and then comes back on 5 seconds later. And you're like, oh, so much for that line that we
thought
was so delicious.
They record the audience.
It's like laugh track.
Yeah, the laugh track. And then you play it with the movie and you okay, so like nothing, no laugh there, nothing there.
But, you know, we did a fair amount of, I mean, it was a fast shoot, but we did a fair amount of alt. So a lot of times, you know, a line doesn't work and you have a different version of it and you try it in the next one. And, you know, it's really a puzzle and you're just trying to get as many laughs in as possible.
Yeah. Were you still in the shooting stage when you're testing, or are you editing by that point?
We're editing at that point.
Okay, so it's basically just a matter of like cutting something out or.
Yeah. And it's a lot of like, ooh, this subtle nuanced joke. I love this thing coming up. Hopefully this will get a laugh and like nothing like whoop, that's gone.
Oh, stupid me. I forgot to ask you about Ghostbusters 3.
We'll see what happens. I mean, where Bill hasn't read the script yet, and
it should come out in 2020.
Okay, all right.
Christmas 2020.
Yeah,
it's not really time sensitive at this point. It doesn't seem.
No, exactly.
No.
Our whole Y2K thing when we started writing this thing in '97, the whole Y2K storyline is completely out the door. So now we have to figure something else out.
So was this something that was your idea, or did the studio bring this to you?
The studio. Brought it to us. They started talking about it, and we'd done a couple movies with them, and then we started having kind of preliminary talks and just talking about the notion of it, and then you know, we started talking to Harold, we started talking to Ivan and Dan, and you know, we wrote a draft, and you know, it's been a process, and I mean, it hasn't been a bad process at all. It's actually been pretty fun, and you know, to have the opportunity to write a movie. I mean, we have a bullseye on our back, but it's pretty fucking fun to write, you know, lines of dialogue for characters that you grew up with. And it would be nice if Mr. Murray chose to read the script and respond, because we worked really hard on it.
When they first called us up and said their thing about, you know, relaunching it, my first thought was like, don't, that's a bad idea, don't do it. My second thought was, well, if you're going to do it, you know, hire us.
Yeah, it's like people's kids, like, you know. Everybody else's kids are dumb, but that's why you have to have one of your own. So the, right. There's less. Yeah. Right. I don't want to ask you guys about that too much.
What'd you say? Were you going to ask?
I wasn't going to ask you. I wasn't going to dig on Ghostbusters 3, I guess.
thank you.
Yeah. If we hear anything interesting, you will be breaking it.
I mean, has Dan Aykroyd requested that you put in like some more alien sort of subplots in there?
The only thing he requested is every scene needs to have a Crystal Head vodka in the frame. But that's really the only thing.
Anything else? Anything else besides Bad Teacher that you guys want to get out there?
No, but I will say this is the only media we're doing for the whole. Run of Bad teachers, so whatever. This is it. If anyone wants to hear,
if anyone wants to pull quotes, you pull from this podcast.
All right, right on. Well, thank you guys for talking to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is fun.
All right,
man.
All right, and the Squirrel Master Brett is in the house.
We need like the P Diddy.
Hey, come on, Squirrel Master,
turn my mic up.
Do you like that? You gotta adapt or die. Do you like that? If you can't draw the tail good, it's just not gonna read squirrel.
It's the breakdown. I gotta get at least to the breakdown.
Fake Brett sounds like Brett Favre.
Do you like that?
Sounds like Philip Rivers.
Like how Brendan has two references, both to football.
Do you like that? What do you think about if you put a picture of your penis and then you put a caption on it? I enjoy making love, having sex, and drawing football beards. I enjoy making love more than I like having sex.
It's like you think you're going to play just a little bit of it, and then you're like, oh, man, I just got to hear
a minute.
Just got to hear the next 10 seconds.
Yeah. Whoa, hey, what happened? I must have blacked out. I had a whole list of questions to ask those two guys, and
I feel like
surprisingly
I feel like I didn't get a chance to get a word in there.
Yeah, it seems like you guys were just sitting there. I mean,
I think we switched to East Coast time, Steven Seagal style.
Ooh, yeah, I don't keep track of that.
We don't keep track of space and time too well.
Hold on, he's fingering for it. Finger for it.
Where is that damn button?
Finger blast that soundboard.
Do it. Press it.
Do you even
press
have
it.
That one? I
yeah,
thought we had
we
that
have
one.
That one. Press the button, pussy.
All right.
I don't really keep track of space and time too well.
Sorry.
It's true.
I'm suck. I suck.
Not worth it.
Can't find the button. Just like sex. Anywho. Well, in other news this week, unfortunately, Ryan Dunn drove about 4,000 miles an hour, and he is no longer on this earth.
Wait, I thought it was a plane crash.
No,
car
no.
crash?
No.
No, I don't read the news.
No, it was a car crash.
He was going 140. Between 130 and 140.
He drove, wasn't it like 40 yards into the woods?
Yeah.
As they said?
Yeah.
Which is really, really, really
far. He hopped
far.
The guardrail. Yeah.
And there's another dude in his car also, which is...
They couldn't tell if they died on impact or burned to death. So it was obviously, like, I saw the picture of
the
salvage.
I'm just
going to
go out on a limb and say if you hit a tree at 140 miles an hour, you probably died on impact.
Right,
in a fucking Porsche. It's not like he was driving
a
Volvo.
At least probably get knocked out. So sad story there. And then...
I was really bummed. He was one of my favorite jackassers.
Yeah, me too.
He was like, he was always really funny. He was good with the one-liners. And he, you know, like, always... he always seemed to suffer the most. Like, he was always like, like when he jumped onto the cacti and he was just, like, freaking out. Like, that was so goddamn funny. And part of it was like, you're just looking at it, you're like, oh God, that's got to fucking hurt. And he's like yelling about it. And he's like pissed off that he had to do it, but he did it anyway.
Yeah. So like, I totally get the people who are like, oh, what an idiot, like driving drunk. I mean, apparently he had like 23 previous traffic citations and a previous DUI before this.
And he's well over double the limit.
Yeah.
0.19 is pretty intoxicated.
Yeah. I mean, I get when people are like, what an asshole. Yeah. He killed another dude. Not cool. But also, I don't know. When people are like, oh, what a douche. He like made his living shoving toy cars up his butt and blah, blah, blah. I'm pretty sure if I had a chance to be do jackass for a living, I would have done that.
You shove toy cars in your butt, and that's not in a movie.
Yeah, we did that like mostly for free.
Yeah, we used to do that shit. We just never had the good sense to film it.
I know. I mean, I would definitely.
You've got multiple toy cars in your butt right now.
If I had the choice, I would have definitely.
How many cars are in your butt right now?
Just 100 cars.
It's like a
Hot Wheels.
It's like a 40 car.
It's like a 40 car Hot Wheel pileup. It's a butt.
Yeah, my intestines is one big
gridlock. Gridlock. No more cars to fit in the city limits.
I got the Micro Machines guy in there. He's just talking all fast.
That's true. If you had Micro Machines, Micro Machines.
They just
talking to six. I got to get out of here.
So many Micro Machines. So small, small, small.
So the controversy was that Ebert sort of injected himself. Well, didn't really inject himself, but he tweeted right after it happened. This was before anybody knew like that he was even driving or was driving drunk. He tweeted, "Friends don't let jackasses drink and drive." And then there was, you know, like Bam got all pissed off about it. And of course,
everyone told Ebert to shut his mouth, which like no one kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is.
That's double sad.
We are living in a world where it's sort of random celebrities can communicate without actually talking
really
to each other. Yeah. Like they have these outlets.
Without going through their agents as intermediaries.
Yeah. It's like they're using their Twitter feed to sort of converse with each other, but not.
God, you're just shouting into the crowd, but there's two people at opposite ends.
Coughing in someone's butt.
Yeah.
Coughing into someone's butt? Does it fart itself back out?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah,
you're our resident fart expert.
If you're lucky, Ben.
I'm the resident fart giggler.
It's true.
By the way, I did throw down the challenge last week that someone needs to send in like a wood cutting of a fart, and we definitely got a couple of the papal Belvedere, which I really love because Belvedere means view. So it was like two guys like lighting their farts in like protest of the Pope, which just I loved on so many levels.
Oh, by the way, someone sent us a Slate article about poop transplants, and my God, there are some fucking amazing quotes in this. Let me just read you the lead. Like, you want to talk a journalistic lead? This is how you write it. Beginning, scene. One day in 2008, Ruth, a Long Island teacher, walked into her doctor's office with a container of a relative's feces, laid down, and had her doctor pump the stool inside her.
I
We actually
we're never going to get Brendan back from this.
Do you think there was a tasteful illustration to go along with it?
All right, I'm skipping down a little bit. I'm skipping down a little bit.
We've lost
scatter
Brendan.
Chart.
I'm skipping down a little bit. It talks about what her problems.
Scatter.
Then she met Lawrence Brandt, a gastroenterologist at the Montefiore Medical Center in the Bronx, who believed he had developed a procedure to cure people.
Diarrhea.
Diarrhea. Did we use scatter charts
last
time?
You're stepping all over this.
I didn't get that at all until just then. The story's not important.
No, no, no.
What's important is the concept of poop inside of one person.
I got such a good quote
that
here.
That came from another person.
I got such a good quote here. Here, all right.
That's not my poop.
Back to the article.
You're not getting me. That's not what my poop smells like.
The body's rejecting the poop.
We need another donor stat. Who needs a shit right now? We need a donor.
Dr. Brandt has been inserting feces into his patients for a decade now and claims to be solving their problems nearly 100% of the time.
Nearly. What happens the other percent?
We don't talk about that. That gets revealed in the third act.
Diarrhea.
That's poop gone wrong.
Diarrhea.
We got an email from John.
This is a box of shit.
A fecal
this is a shoebox full of shit.
A fecal transplant seems to work as a sort of mega probiotic, allowing doctors to repopulate a patient's intestines with the appropriate microorganisms by placing a robust sample directly into her gut. Doctors recommend
that it was a robust sample.
I knew you would. Doctors recommend that the fecal donor be someone close to the patient, a family member perhaps, or a spouse. Scientists.
Wait, why if it's a spouse? Is there something that happens, like they may not be the same poop type, but because they have like the bond of love, that like some way, like the poop will find a way to like make its purchase
so
in the colon?
Wasn't that in Jurassic Park? Yeah. Poop finds a way?
So this
shit knows. The shit knows.
Wait. All right.
Well, this is what I'm picturing. Hold on, Vince. This is what I'm picturing. So
pooping in and out forever.
Honey, how was your visit to the doctor? Is everything okay? Sit down. We need to talk.
Actually, don't sit down.
Don't sit down.
Squat.
This container, you're going to have to shit in it. I need your poop.
If you want me to live.
I need your shit.
Shit in this if you want to live. Doctors recommend, blah, blah, blah. Scientists reason that when people live in close quarters, they are exposed to similar bacteria, good and bad, and are likely to have had a similar set of bacteria living in their guts before anyone got sick. The donor takes a stool softener the night before and then gives a full morning bowel movement to the recipient, who takes it to a doctor for screening. Hold on. Someone get the smelling salts, Brendan.
We're losing Brendan.
Clear. All right. Oh, man, this next part's going to kill him. It's important to make sure that the sample doesn't contain any parasites or other pathogens, such as hepatitis, salmonella, or HIV. Once the transplant material has been cleared...
You get poop AIDS.
Once you get AIDS, poop transplant.
In the 80s. Have you ever had a poop transplant in the 80s? Once the transplant material has been cleared, the doctor mixes it with saline to make about a pint of liquid with the consistency of a milkshake.
Oh, shit just got too real for me. I'm out.
This is pumped into the patient's colon using a colonoscope or an endoscope, or siphoned into the stomach.
There's some dude at the other end of the tube just like, oh, God, please let me.
Oh, wait. Time out. Or siphoned into the stomach via nasogastric tube. Parenthetical.
Through your nose?
Parenthetical. The latter method is considered more dangerous since there's a chance feces will end up in the lungs.
Oh.
Poop lung?
You got doo-doo lung. That's worse than the black lung. You got the brown lung.
Oh, he got doo-doo lung.
How'd you get AIDS? Bad poop transplant, man.
Oh, man.
Bad poop transplant.
Oh, I didn't even get this far, but good God.
This fart?
No. Oh.
I thought it was funny.
I can always count on Brendan.
And then there's the do-it-yourself crowd.
Whoa. That paragraph was hidden past the point where I gave
hold
up.
Hold the phone.
Space docking.
Hold the phone.
This includes people like poop enthusiast Brendan.
Would you like to hear how the do-it-yourself crowd does it?
Go on.
Themselves.
Proceed.
Go on.
Brendan's taking notes now.
In great detail. Hold on.
All you need is a bottle of saline. a 2-quart enema bag, and 1 standard kitchen blender.
Which you can never use again.
Well, yes, you can. I'm picturing one of those pastry bags like for like with piping.
Oh, yeah, where they've got the different spouts yeah. for the different
frosting. Where you can make frosting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where you can make happy faces.
Stars. Right. Make little
you
stars.
You can put different nozzles on it to like get a different shape.
Oh, like Play-Doh. Or,
oh, yeah. with the squeeze thing, and it squeezes that little donut shape. And then you slice it off.
I'm going to make a poop flower.
Yeah. I'm going to make such a flower for your butt out of poop.
Mike Silverman, a University of Toronto physician who wrote up a guide to homespun fecal transplants for the journal Clinical Gastroenterology and Hepatology.
Brendan, honestly, how is this not framed? How is that article not framed in your place?
Or tattooed on his eyelid.
Guys, I'm going to... boss, sit down. I'm going to be out for about 4 days. I need to go to the fecal transplant
summit.
Yes, summit.
There's people that need my shit.
Yeah, I'm going to be speaking there. Mostly laughing, but a little bit of speaking.
It's like a beer bong. You're just pooping into the top.
Are you reading through?
We did. I was trying to find some more blender. Well, you know, poop.
We did get an email.
Well, my friend actually one time he had something wrong with him, and the doctor asked him to take a stool sample, and they gave him one of those like tiny little cups with like
I
the
have,
sterile.
I had to do
thing.
That before.
Yeah, and so, but
you're
he,
like trying to hold this little shot glass over your butt. It's like, dude, come on, give me like a bucket or something.
Yeah, exactly. He had the same thing, and he knew it was going to be like a huge turd. So
they give you a little plastic spoon to like it's like a gelato. It's like a little gelato.
Oh, like a little. Sample.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if this is going to do it for
doing
me.
That, he just grabbed his blender and took a shit in it.
What is it with shitting in blenders?
I don't know. He took
that,
a shit in the
blender. How would that be the reasonable thing to do? Why would
it was
you
the
get,
largest
like,
receptacle that he had.
How much did he have to shit?
But doesn't
he,
that
it was like a big log.
But what?
You don't need the whole thing.
But why you use your blender for milkshake?
And doesn't that sort of sully the poop transplant if you blend it up?
He didn't blend it. He just that was the receptacle.
Not if you put pine nuts in it and a little bit of olive oil.
Because it's way bigger than that little cup they give you. And needless to say, he got married in March. I got him a blender for the wedding gift.
Oh, with poop? Did you poop in it?
This is the most. Yes, of course.
Vince and I once received a blender full of weed from a drug dealer that had to leave the country on short notice, and we didn't realize at the time that a blender full of weed that's been chopped up is higher density than just your standard nug, and so we smoked out of a bong, and then for the rest of the night, Vince thought he was a rhino, and we went to go get tacos, and he...
I'm not the weirdo that had a rhino horn in his room.
Well, I had assorted bones, and you chose the rhino horn.
Oh, by the way, okay, can we talk about this? One time, this is why Brett is called the Dark Lord. He once bought a bag of mouse bones off the internet.
It was from different animals.
Okay.
It was assorted bones.
I don't know where
I got the assorted bone
like
package.
Decorative bones.
It is difficult to find.
What does that run these days?
I think it's like 15 bucks.
And one of them was like a random horn that looked like a rhino horn. Also, he broke one of the horns, one of the bones open.
Whoa. I was trying to make a crown of femurs. I drilled through the bone.
Fair. And and it smelled like death on the inside.
Oh, God. Like rotted marrow is the worst smell you can ever smell. I almost threw up while I was making my crown.
Oh,
crown
man.
Of femurs.
All right, so I got some more good quotes from...
Don't stand downwind of me. I'm a rhino. I have poor eyesight, but am enraged by smell.
Infectious disease experts are a little more tempered in their enthusiasm. According to Vincent Young at the University of Michigan, the data looked promising, but he wouldn't perform a fecal transplant himself because there are too many unknowns about what bad things might be lurking in a stool sample.
Spiders. Man,
Vince Young is such a hater. No wonder it didn't work out with the Titans.
Yeah.
Go back to your poop analysis, mm-hmm. Vince Young.
Mm-hmm. William Schaffner, president of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases.
These are all made up. Vince Young and William Schaffner
warned that the procedure is still in its early days and not yet ready for prime time.
Yeah, this kind of seems like shenanigans.
But the true believers have even bigger plans. They hope fecal transplant might be used to treat other gut-related problems.
Wait, is this the same article?
Yes.
Nah, is this really Slate?
Yeah, this sounds like shenanigans.
With this in mind, researchers found that fat mice would lose weight if transplanted with feces from thin ones.
Ooh. Thin poop.
Oh, it's
this
just
going to be a thing.
This is a miracle cure. Brendan, I think you need to quit your job and just get at the forefront of this exciting
You need
move.
To be a consultant.
Doo-doo consultant. It's on my business card.
What would a cold call about poop transplant sound like, Brendan?
Hi, this is Brendan. I'm calling from Doo-doo Unlimited. Want to talk to you about potential fecal transplants.
You have to assume that they, you know, part of Brendan's sales technique.
You've heard of fecal transplants, haven't you?
I have not.
Oh. Well, are you in front of your computer?
I am.
And are you sitting down? I mean, do you need to poop?
Over the weekend, this dude who...
Are you pooping?
Who was all tatted up, looked like kind of like a homeless person. He came up to me and he's like, you wouldn't be able to let me use your phone for a quick, really important phone call, would you? And, you know, I immediately thought of Brendan. Like, that is just not the way to make a sale. He already gave me an out before he was even finished done asking the question. You're supposed to assume that they've already...
Yeah, you got to be assumptive.
Yeah, assumptive. That's what it's called. What are your little gay sales words that you use for it?
Assumptive.
Isn't it? It's like an assumptive positive or
assumptive close.
Like
no, just assumptive, yeah. Just like... The assumptive way to do it is like, hey, I need to use your phone. I'll give it right back.
I'll give you your phone back after you've already given it to me, which has happened now.
Right.
Mm. It's happening. You're giving it to me.
I had a little weird Russian lady shout at me to give her my phone. Just, you give phone to me. I make call now. And I was kind of like, no, it's a work phone.
Well, she's obviously had sales training.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, for a while there, I thought, maybe I'll make some money out of this. I should give her my phone.
You buy premium package now, yes. We make for you good.
You get new phone.
You think that would
you
be
you want to get started with premium package.
You want the phone, I get you great phone.
We make you buy. That's not very good.
We'll be right back after this new song, Squirrels in the Sky by DJ Squirrel Master.
I don't know if we can go for three. Yeah.
It's all right. We can fix this in editing.
Well, did Brendan?
Oh, yeah, yet another email.
Did you want to hear about an email about poop transplant method that a different John once saw?
Yes. Wait, time out. This is the third John.
Well, you know what? It could be the same one.
Holy,
there's not that many Johns.
There's really only one listener.
Do we have any listeners that aren't named John? Jesus Christ.
We got we have a listener named Phil who just sent the email very recently, right before we started. Subject line, F. Scott Fartzgerald, body, the great Scatsby. And then in parentheses, the F stands for fart.
Interesting.
I thought that was a very simple yet clever.
So this one reads, Dear Vince and company, but to Brendan in particular, about a year or two ago, I was browsing through TV looking for something to watch when I saw my first poop transplant. I forgot the name of the show, but it was on Discovery or the Science Channel or something like that. The recipient of the poop transplant was a woman who was dealing with ulcerative colitis or some other autoimmune reaction. The poop donor was her husband, so it's true. For the procedure, they had the husband poop into a sterile bowl and then added some distilled water to the poop to make it a thin paste. They then ran a tube down the wife's throat and, using a syringe, pumped a small amount of her husband's fecal matter through the tube into her stomach.
Was she German?
Apparently, this procedure had to be repeated a number of times. Hold on, Brendan. We're getting to the best part. And she had to be on a special diet, both to make sure her stomach didn't get upset and kill off all the bacteria with acid overproduction, and to make sure none of the poop came back up. As you can imagine, a wet burp composed of your significant other's shit can't taste too great and might put you off to the whole procedure for good.
I'm assuming they got divorced right after that.
I'm sure there are other intestinal...
She had to give the poop back to him.
I'm sure there are other intestinal flora...
Give him half.
Yeah, I'm going to need that back. That was in the post.
Don't separate. Don't stop.
Yeah. I'm sure there are other intestinal flora replacement methods out there, but this is the one that I saw. If you guys have received a few other emails by now explaining the procedure, maybe Vince would be so kind as to post an entry on Film Drunk listing some of the more popular and or amusing ones. In any event, keep up the great streak of broadcast. Stay classy and good chins, John.
That sounds like a great idea, Vince.
Maybe that could
but it does involve work.
Yeah.
So.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's not jacking
off.
People
send me a lot of emails, and it's like, hey, do you want to do a post about this? And I'm usually, how much work is that going to involve?
I like what Dave Chappelle has a funny thing. Whenever you talk in the high voice, it's sort of like you're not interested.
Start a lot with the sucking it.
I'm not sure about that.
No, I don't really know.
I don't know if I want to do that.
I also made a new discovery this week. You guys probably haven't noticed this, but you know the blog comment spam where it's, you know, it goes to like dating sites and whatnot, the bots.
So, I like your site, but no, it is a good site. This site with naked ladies.
Penile enhancement Nigeria. Great rates on mortgages.
So now the bots, there's certain bots that they copy and paste other comments, which is pretty hilarious.
I am a fan of the Mac OS X. You are giving me the dick.
Yeah, so imagine you add this to the kind of commenters that we have on Film Drunk. And like, I was just going to read some of the comment.
You've gotten some of this?
Yes. Here's my spam comment. My dad always told me to put one of the jackass guys in my Deadpool, but a couple of years back, I won the pool when I had Roger Ebert's jaw. I am a 28-year-old doctor, mature and beautiful, and now I am seeking a good man who can give me real love. So I got username Andromeda2002 on SeekCougar.com. It is the first and best club for younger women and older men, or older women, younger men, to interact with each other.
You have to read it like a robot. That's what makes it funny. Yeah.
SeekCougar.com. That's great site.
SeekCougar.com.
Yeah. That's the only one I can find because I think I deleted most of their accounts. But
it's
pretty hilarious when you add my ridiculous commenters to.
Was that
an
entire comment and then they add it?
Yeah, I think you need to leave them just for the sake of.
I know.
Yeah, I've only seen the ones where they mix it in, right? So they'll throw in searchable terms, right? So they'll grab sentences from other sites, but they won't always be from your site, right? Mm. They'll just be like, let's grab the top three things on Google right now. And so you get this awesome, like, ground up shit
zeitgeist.
It's like you shit in a blender and then piped it in through your throat.
I hate that there's like the bitchy bots where it'll just be programmed to be like, LOL, what WTF is this guy talking about? And then it'll go into their whole spiel. It's like, bitch, you don't have to fucking insult me before you plug your shit. Fuck you.
Your opinion is stupid. This video sucks. And then it's 39.
We're teaching our robots to be snarky assholes now. Fuck you, man.
Vince, you have gay clown hair. For extra rock hard dick, visit.
That's exactly Vince, what these it's are all like.
Viagra.ru.
You didn't know that all these are funny bots?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You are a dickhead on your site. Please come buy dildos.
Everyone from Long Island have hair like pussy, you dickweed?
Oh, this is kind of random, but when I said gay clown hair, I remembered this. So on Friday, I was on the bus here in San Francisco.
Uh-huh, as you do.
And I saw a girl that I work with. She actually works for me. And so I was like joking around.
Could you see your panties?
As I was getting off the bus, I'm like, all right, have a good weekend.
Could you see your panties
at
all?
What color were they?
She was wearing pants.
I see that. All
right, have a great weekend.
What did that one? You can see like the little whale tail.
You just going to fucking step on this joke? You asshole.
Sorry, go ahead.
Fuck
I want to know about her panties now.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I'm getting off the bus and like kind of jokingly be like, all right, have a good weekend. No funny business. And from the other side of the bus, I hear this guy go, did somebody say funny business? And I look over and it's a guy in a fucking clown outfit. And my first – and so I was actually surprised at how well I was able to keep it together because I was like, what I said was, yeah, this guy knows what I'm talking about. What I wanted to say was, ah! And I like as soon as I got off the bus, I was like, holy shit, it's Extremo. Like, it was like I actually had that thought. That it was like Extremo had found me.
He found me.
Oh, we need to. Oh, what cost? Man, get some Extremo drops on the soundboard. That would be the shit.
Yeah. But, you know, picture this. You're on like a crowded city bus and like you just say funny business and casual passing to someone else. And from the other fucking side of the bus, there's a guy who you never noticed before.
It's interrupting clown.
Somebody say funny business?
Brendan, I'm more concerned that you didn't notice the clown on the
prior.
It was a crowded city bus.
It was a clandestine clown.
Still, you know, they kind of make a living off standing out with their red.
Yeah, that is kind of what
shaven.
They do.
He wasn't spraying people with a fake fucking flower, Brett.
They have giant red noses.
I bet it was Kenny the Clown. There's this guy that comes to open mics. His name is Kenny the Clown, and he's a clown. That's why it's not just a cute name.
Oh.
But so he gets on stage.
What's his name's Steve.
And like if this
don't give him away.
I'm not sure if it is performance art, but if it is, it's kind of brilliant. He goes on stage and he doesn't really do material. He's just dressed like a clown, and then he sits up there and he sort of like complains about, ah, man, I should really write more material. He doesn't have any jokes other than complaining about the fact that he doesn't have any jokes. And his one bit that is kind of funny is that he'll answer his cell phone, which is shaped like a banana in the middle of it.
Oh, banana phone! Never not funny.
Exactly.
I thought it was a banana.
Oh.
It's a phone?
I thought he just talked into a banana for a while.
It doesn't matter. It's funny either way, I feel.
So I'm going to be 30 this weekend, and I was probably, I don't know.
Old ass
life
loser.
Sucks.
Yeah. I was probably 12, maybe, and I remember watching
when you were young,
The State
and you didn't suck?
On MTV, and there's a scene
could you see anyone's panties?
Michael Showalter pulls out a banana and talks into it like the phone,
yeah.
And he actually says, I told you not to call me here, and man, that just changed my life.
Me and Brett used to do this thing where we'd pull out our wallets and yell into them.
From Tom Green.
Freddie Got Fingered quotes.
Yeah.
You're fucking fired, Bob!
Oh, you did that when you were wasted and blacked out in Australia and no one knew what the fuck you were talking about. And you had the crowd around you, and then you're
20 million Deutschmarks.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. 20 million. I said Helsinki, you heard Geneva, you're fucking fired.
Yeah.
And then you pulled your shirt over your head so they could see your stomach, and then you dropped your pants and just sort of did a little dance, and no one knew what the fuck was going on, man. That was great.
That's called Tuesday, DeVince.
This is a surrealist.
It's performance
art. This is happening. You're living it.
Neo-cubist.
All right, man. You guys wanna take this thing to bed? We got anything else we need?
I think we covered it.
Pressing?
Do we have another 40 minutes?
We can talk about poop transplants for another 3 hours. I'd be okay with that.
We're gonna start getting calls because we are. I would say the internet authority on poop transplants at this point.
We are
honest. Trevor Blank is talking about putting out an ebook about fart lore, which I would read it.
I would read it. I would download it on my Kindle.
That's exactly what he wants to do. He wants to do like a 99-cent download on the Kindle with some of his findings about fart lore. And
I would pay $99 for that.
Wow. You might as well just buy 100 and just...
Yeah. Fill your library. Build the same book about farts.
I'll gift them to all the loyal Frotcast listeners.
Animals being dicks. Kind of taken off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dogs will push chairs out from underneath you.
I like the llama.
Yeah, the condescending llama.
The devil llama, yeah.
Ooh, which devil llama.
Yeah, we put that on the fake Danzig.
Yeah.
That we don't run.
Brett tried to send me Birds with Arms as if I hadn't already seen that shit in like 2006.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it that old?
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
All right, well, thanks to...
I'm putting this whole fucking town in my rear view.
Yeah, we are going to put this whole freaking broadcast in a rear view. Thanks to the writers of Bad Teacher, I... Do forget their names, Vince.
It was great talking to you guys.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
They're
thanks.
Your people, man. Gene Stupnitsky and Lee Eisenberg.
I don't know every Jew's name in the world.
Well, what? Did you not go to the last meeting?
Someone should write them all down somewhere.
Seriously, there's not that many left.
Where yeah, is
that? Someone
yeah.
should keep meticulous records.
How are you all doing tonight? Yeah, are there any homosexuals in the audience?
Someone did send us an email.
Gypsies?
Someone did send us an email.
Nine?
With a fake joke that said, so a Jew, and a Jew walk into a quote-unquote shower. And that was the whole joke.
That's messed up. Anyway, Wakas. Made my fucking week.
Oh, let's let that take us
if
out.
If anyone else wants to do a remix, do it.
We don't have any prizes necessarily, but we'll come up with something.
The
prize
is the feeling of a job well done and hearing me laugh for 40 minutes about poop transplants.
I cried at work.
Yeah. Happy tears.
This time,
well, Brennan, right. Take us on out of here, and we'll play the song.
Brett.
All right.
He's in the
good
house.
Night and good chins.
Hey, 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 hey. Do you like that? Hey, 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 hey. You gotta adapt or die. Hey, hey, do you like that? Hey, hey, if you can't draw the tail good, it's just not gonna read squirrel.
Fake Brett sounds like Brett Favre.
Hey, 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 do you like that?
He sounds like Philip Rivers.
I've been drawing stuff all day. Hey, 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 do you like that? Hey, hey, what do you think about if you put a picture of your penis and then you put a caption on it? I enjoy making love, having sex, making love, having sex, making love and drawing stuff all day. Hey. I enjoy making love more than I like having sex. I feel like it's deeper.